ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नान्याय अधिष्ठितं भद्रा यद्राजिष्णु द्रुवक्षिति यत्र कंधार्ष दं ग्रहार्ष तारानां ज्योतिषं चक्रम आहितं नान्याय अधिष्ठितं भद्रा यद्राजिष्णु द्रुवक्षिति यत्र ग्रहार्ष तारानां ज्योतिषं चक्रम आहितं Na,
na,
never.
Anyai,
by others. Adishtitam
was ruled.
Badra,
my good boy.
Yat,
which?
Brajishnu,
brightly glowing.
Dhruva Kshiti,
the land known as Dhruvaloka.
Yatra,
where?
Graha,
planets.
Viksha,
constellations.
Tarana,
and stars.
Jyotisham,
by luminaries.
Chakram,
encirclement.
Ahitam,
is done.
And you see, that's 21 and 20. Excuse me, 21 is connected. The translation is put together. And I'll just read the translation. This is Vishnu speaking to Dhruva. The Supreme Personality Godhead continued, My dear Dhruva, I shall award you the glowing planet known as the pole star, which will continue to exist even after the dissolution at the end of the millennium. No one has ever ruled this planet, which is surrounded by all the solar systems. Note, solar systems means many suns. That's because the sun and its planets is the solar system. Planets and stars, all the luminaries in the sky circumambulate this planet just as bulls tread around a central pole for the purpose of crushing grains, keeping the pole star to their right. All the stars inhabited by the great sages like Dharma, Agni, Kashyapa, and Shukra circumambulate this planet, which continues to exist even after the dissolution of all others. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Although the pole star existed before its occupation by Dhruva Maharaj, it had no predominating deity. Dhruvaloka, our pole star, is the center for all other stars and solar systems. For all of them circle around Dhruvaloka just as a bull crushes grains by walking around and around a central pole. Dhruva wanted the best of all planets, and although it was a childish prayer, the Lord satisfied his demand. A small child may demand something from his father which his father has never given to anyone else. Yet out of affection, the father offers it to the child. Similarly, this unique planet, Dhruvaloka, was offered to Maharaj Dhruva. The specific significance of this planet is that until the end of the universe, until the entire universe is annihilated, this planet will remain even during the devastation which takes place during the night of Lord Brahma. There are two kinds of dissolutions, one during the night of Lord Brahma and one at the end of Lord Brahma's life. At the end of Lord Brahma's life, selected personalities go back home, back to Godhead. Dhruva Maharaj is one of them. The Lord assured Dhruva that he would exist beyond the partial dissolution of this universe. Thus, at the end of the complete dissolution, Dhruva Maharaj would go directly to Vaikuntha Loka, to a spiritual planet in the spiritual sky. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments in this connection that Dhruva Loka is one of the lokas like Shvetadvipa, Mathura, and Dwaraka. They are all eternal places in the kingdom of Godhead, which is described in the Bhagavad Gita, Tad Dhamma Paramam, and in the Vedas, Om Tad Vishnu Param Padam Sada Pashanti Surayaha. The words Prastat Kalpa Vasinam, it's not on the board here, but it's text 21, which means transcendental to the planets inhabited after the dissolution, refer to the Vaikuntha planets. In other words, Dhruva Maharaj's promotion to the Vaikuntha lokas was guaranteed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This verse and other related verses that say essentially the same thing, the position, the configuration of cosmology is a key verse for the formation of our temple of Vedic planetarium. Ambarish Prabhu at one of our GBC meetings played the little video clip of Prabhupada having a room conversation. Don't know where it was. Maybe it was Detroit, maybe it was New York. So Prabhupada was seated over here and there were different devotees in the room, and in a very light-hearted way, kind of one of those half-joking, more than the other half is meaning it, Prabhupada was describing a Vedic planetarium that he wanted to be built. He referred to this verse, and then he turned to Ambarish and smiled and said, "Would you like to build it?" And that light-hearted, I don't know if those exactly the words that Prabhupada used, I can't recall, but it was that light-hearted gesture of Srila Prabhupada that has moved the soft heart of Ambarish to this day to focus on seeing the construction of the Temple of Vedic Planetarium. What a expert way of Prabhupada engaging such a person, and what a disciple Ambarish Prabhu is. Just a gesture, and that became a mission in his life. So the conversation went on. Prabhupada was using hand motions to say the planetarium should have something like a chandelier. So anybody in the room doesn't know what a chandelier is. We all know what a chandelier is. Okay, so like a chandelier, where the chandelier is suspended from something on the ceiling, and then the chandelier is hanging down from that something, from the ceiling, suspended from the ceiling. And this is a chandelier that moves. It rotates. And it rotates in a clockwise manner, like as the hands of the clock move, so it moves. And it represents, like a chandelier, it represents the planets that are circumambulating Dhruva Loka. They're moving in a clockwise motion, some in a faster, some in a slower orbit, but they're all moving. The whole universe is moving. So parts of the universe are moving, but the whole universe is moving. And they're upper, middle, and lower planets, like parts of the chandelier. So if you look at it two-dimensional, then Dhruva Loka is in the middle, and planets are moving around Dhruva Loka. look at it three-dimensional, and it's a chandelier, a vertical chandelier, where the planetary systems are moving. So it's a description. This verse is a description of Vedic cosmology or cosmography. And terms that are used in the verse, and they're ones that are on the board. We recited the word for word, but I'll point them out specifically. I'm not an astrologer buff, but some devotees are, and I know some of these terms. Graha means planets. So when somebody does an astrological chart, this planet is in conjunction or in opposition with that planet. Graha, graha. Planet, graha refers to planets. Riksha refers to constellations. Taranam refers to stars. And Jyotisham refers to luminaries. And they're chakram, they're circling of the pole star. So, several things. In some places, maybe even in many places, Prabhupada writes and expresses himself in such a way that you read it carefully, and it certainly sounds like Prabhupada is saying, in our universe, there's only one sun. Very clear. And, of course, that's not what modern scientists say, but who cares what modern scientists say? Well, there's only one sun. Now here, twice, both in the verse and the purport, the solar systems, so many suns, solar systems, is a sun with its planets, and solar systems are moving around the pole star, you know, in the vertical hierarchy. And Sataputta addressed this, and Dhanavir Maharaj didn't like it because he liked the, you know, there's only one sun version. That there are the way that Sataputta has presented the Vedic picture of the universe or the Vedic cosmology. I won't go too far into it, but he says that there are simultaneous models depicted in one portrayal. So he gives the example, in fact he shows a painting of Krishna's pastime of stealing, of Brahma stealing the cowherd boys and calves and puts them in the cave. So you see over in this part of the picture, there's the cave, there's the cowherd boys, there's the calves, there's Lord Brahma. And then over here in this part of the picture, Brahma is seeing the cowherd boys and the calves and Krishna having lunch. Krishna and the cowherd boys having lunch. And then over there is Brahma paying his obeisances, bowing his head before Krishna, who's holding a lump of yogurt in his left hand and some fruit. So, in one painting is several parts of the whole story. It's one painting. If you don't know the story, there's Krishna and there's Krishna, there's Brahma, there's Brahma, there's Brahma. What's going on? What's going on? In his Mysteries of the Sacred Universe, he's shown another one from the New Testament. There's one of the disciples of Christ who's a fisherman, and he's catching fish in his net. Maybe somebody knows which of that, those disciples it was that was the fisherman. And inside the fish there was a gold coin. And then the next scene is the representative of Caesar or the government saying, please tell us, who does the gold coin belong to? Is it the property of the Caesar, or is it the property of God? And, you know, that was like a challenge to Christ, and if you don't say the right thing, we're putting you in jail. So he gave a very nice answer. He said, render unto Caesar what is Caesar's, render to God what is God's. Pretty clever. And then the next scene is, I don't recall which of the disciples, but he's giving the coin to the collector, the tax collector for the king. So in one painting, there's multiple parts of the story. Sariputta says, similarly, the Bhagavatam gives multiple portrayals of aspects of Vedic cosmology, and it doesn't take the trouble of saying this means, this refers to this part, that refers to that part, and that another thing refers to another part. It just says it in all one jumble. And you have to be like the Hariyashvas that can understand riddles. Kim asat karmabir bhavet. How there's a house with 25 elements, and the light goes on. Oh, we know what that is. That's the material world, and we don't belong here. We belong with the personality of Godhead, who's the source of those 25 elements. So it takes a great deal of spiritual acumen to understand these kinds of things. So this is one example where there's one sun in the whole universe, and there's many solar systems within the universe. Sariputta would say, depends on which model you're talking about. And here's another one. Not to confuse matters more, but Prabhupada is speaking here about the place where Dhruva went, the pole star, this place that's circumambulated by other planets, and he's indicating that it lasts for the lifetime of Brahma. It continues even during the night of Brahma when there's a partial devastation. And it doesn't explicitly say so, but the indication is it's dissolved at the end of the life of Brahma, and Dhruva goes to Vaikuntha. Then he says, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says something different, which it doesn't like get really explicit, but I'll read the commentary of Vishwanath and you can see. Vishwanath comments in this connection that Dhruvaloka is one of the lokas like Svetadvipa, Mathura, and Dwarka. They are eternal places in the kingdom of Godhead, which is described in Bhagavad Gita, Tadama Paramam, that place that's not destroyed. Not only during the night of Brahma, but at the end of Brahma's life. So at the end of Brahma's day, or during his night, there's a partial devastation, and it's described in the following manner. Long period of drought, like hundreds of years of drought, and then from the bottom of the universe, from the mouths of Anantashesh, comes fire. And you put those two things, something dry and fire, it ignites. Big fire. And everything turns to ashes. Like, and the fire goes up to the heavenly planets. The heavenly planets are also destroyed. Above the heavenly planets, there's four other planetary systems. They're not destroyed. It gets really hot in Maharloka and Janaloka. They get in their vimanas and they go to Tapaloka. It's too hot. And when the fire is, there's the downpours of rain. Mahadavagni Nirvapanam. Big rain. And so everything then, there's all this ashes, it gets dissolved in the water. Like an Alka-Seltzer or something. It's just. And so there's a flood. Note similarities in the Old Testament of the flood. And Vedic cosmology says there's this flood at the end of each day of Brahma up to the planet, the heaven planetary systems. The water subsides when it's time for the Brahma's morning, and when Brahma wakes up, he does his sadhana and recreates the whole thing every morning. And he does his, you know, the steps that he goes through to get the impression and the everything. He does his sadhana every day. And then there's a total annihilation. And at the total annihilation, it's not just fire and rain and everything gets dissolved. There's another kind of annihilation. Everything described in the 12th canto of the Bhagavatam, it's kind of like the subtle elements, the other way around. The gross elements fold into the next subtler element, folds into the next subtler element, folds into the next subtler element, and everything becomes wound back within the body of Mahavishnu. And the energy, like Einstein said, matter is neither created nor destroyed, or energy is neither created nor destroyed. It's just in a different state. Shakti Vistarani is the description, the transformation of energies, unfolding, withdrawing, creation, annihilation. So the total devastation, everything is again withdrawn. Except the spiritual planet. Like within this universe, there's a spiritual planet. And that spiritual planet is Svetadvipa. That's where the abode of Kshirodakshayi Vishnu is. And he's not destroyed, and his planet is not destroyed. Brahmaloka is destroyed. Kailash is destroyed. The abode of Lord Shiva. And, you know, everything that's of material nature is destroyed. But that's not made of material nature, so it endures. So what's being said here in the second part of the purport is Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says the place where Dhruva went stays after the annihilation of the universe. So he didn't have to go back to Godhead. He was already back to Godhead. Now I'm going to read Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary, at least the translation. And I'll go back one verse, text 19, where he begins, the personality of Godhead begins speaking to Dhruva. The Lord said, O Prince, determined in vows, I know what you resolved in your heart. All auspiciousness to you, I shall award that place, rarely achieved, and also prema. And he gives a short commentary. Then this verse. He's saying, please accept that place now. O fortunate boy, that's translation here. I give you that radiant place which is eternal, not attainable by anyone else. The zodiac of planets. That's constellations. Riksha in the verse. The zodiac of planets, constellations and stars revolve around it, like oxen walking around a central pillar to grind grains. That place remains till the end of Brahma's life. Bharani, Kritika, Cancer, Venus, and the Big Dipper. This is the translation, the Big Dipper. Revolve around Dhruvaloka in clockwise direction along with the stars. Commentary. I give you that residence, Kshiti, which is eternal, Dhruva, possessing the zodiac belt of planets, constellations, and stars, which are like oxen circling around the central pillar to which they are tied. This remains fixed for the duration of Brahma's life, for those living for that duration, kalpa vasinam, at the final time of final destruction. Some say that Dhruva ascends to Mahavaikuntha. Even though existing within the material universe, Dhruva Loka has the qualities of Sri Tadweep Mathura and Dwarka. The following verses show that Dhruva attained Vaikuntha Loka. He quotes verses from this chapter earlier. Subsequent verses. 28, 25, and then chapter 12. So, having attained the supreme abode of the merciful Lord, which is rarely attained through worshipping the Lord's feet within one lifetime, and although when he was knowledgeable, why did he consider himself unfulfilled? This question being asked by Maharaj Pariksit to Shukadeva Goswami, why was he unhappy? Why was Dhruva feeling unhappy? And earlier, the Lord says, you will go to my abode worshipped by all planets, higher than the Big Dipper, from which you will not return, having gone there. And then chapter 12, O Dhruva, stay in that supreme abode of Vishnu, a place not achieved by your forefathers or any others, which is worshipped by the whole universe. And then the last part is technical. Others say that parastat means Dhruva Loka remains beyond the lifespan of those lasting for Brahma's life, since the planet of the Lord is eternal. Dharma, Agni, and others are the forms of constellations. Vanaushaka. Vanaukasha refers to the seven sages or the Big Dipper. So there are different renderings. Prabhupada has taught us that's quite okay in the spiritual world or in spiritual transcendental acharyas. Sometimes view things in a different way, and if we have mundane vision, we'll get bewildered, saying, well, is it this or is it that? And if we have transcendental vision, there are different ways of perceiving the same thing and expressing the ways of perceiving the same thing, and transcendentalists have both the capacity and the right. We don't have the capacity nor the right. So it may be confusing for us. But that detail isn't so critical, certainly for our purposes of trying to become nice Hare Krishna devotees. Whether the place that Dhruva went lasted only during the night of Brahma or it lasted beyond the life of Brahma. My understanding has always been it lasted. It's the eternal place, the eternal abode. He had to rule for 60,000 years, something like that, in the kingdom of Uttanapada. While Uttanapada went to the forest to follow the path of his son and achieve spiritual perfection. So he became king of this realm. And after this realm, then he went to the abode of the Lord, where he was the king, the monarch, the ruler. Of course, ruler under the personality of Godhead, because ultimately the personality of Godhead is the ruler. But that's how kings, qualified kings, view. They're doing administration, but they're administering on behalf of. And again, not to confuse things, but to hopefully give a little light to things, in Sri Brahma Samhita, in the second and third verses of Sri Brahma Samhita, there's a description of, you ready for this? There are demigods in the spiritual world. No. Yes. But they're not the demigods like the demigods of this world. They're, Bhaktisiddhanta calls them the prototype. Like prototype Brahma. And the prototype demigods. You know what? He has a very wonderful way of using language. If someone wants to make a patent, you're an inventor and you invent something and you want to go to the patent office, you give them one, and that's the prototype. And from the prototype, you make others like the prototype. Yes? Something like that. So, in the spirit, not only are there demigods, in the spiritual sense of demigods, there's the material elements in the spiritual world, in their spiritual form. Isn't that mind-blowing? When this Canto 2, Chapter 9, Srimad Bhagavatam, when Lord Brahma, in the mature stage of his realization, the personality of Godhead makes himself visible. And that means his whole abode. And he comes before the personality of Godhead, and he's surrounded by the 16 and the 9 and the this and the that. And that purport Prabhupada describes what those energies are. There's the spiritual energies and the material energies in their spiritual form. So it's not, this is a reflection of that, in other words. So here there's demigods, and when Lord Brahma receives his mantra, the first of his mantra, he receives from Saraswati. And the second one he receives from Krishna's flute. But when it's Saraswati, it's not his wife. It's the prototype Saraswati, or part of the internal potency of the Supreme Lord, who's the gift of speech and knowledge. And that Saraswati imparts the first of Brahma's mantras. Gopal mantra. That those of us that are Brahminically initiated, we recite. That came from the prototype Saraswati. It's stated right in Brahma Samhita. So our sense of this material world is very limited, but to speak of our sense of the spiritual world, it's really limited. Like, you know, those of us born in America, what do we know about demigods? Till we joined the Hare Krishna movement and we found out there's demigods. And, you know, what to speak of the distinction between the demigods and God. And, you know, how do people get away with saying there's many gods? Part of it is, you know, this idea of demigods. Then you get demigods and many, with that many gods, and then you can have many religions that have many gods. And it's not so. It's a mumbo jumbo. There's one supreme God. There's one source of everything. And that one source of everything exists. Within, in Bhaktisiddhanta's language, the medium-sized form of Krishna. Because previously he described Anor aniyangsam anusmaretyaha. Krishna is bigger than the biggest and smaller than the smallest. So that's the big one and that's the small one, and then there's the medium size. Human-like, meaning not Mahavishnu from whom universes are coming from the little pores of his body, or Paramatma, the form of the Lord where he manifests within the smallest particle of material existence. Prabhupada has translated the Sanskrit term, forget the term, as atom, and the Vedic conception of atom is the smallest particle of matter that cannot be further divided. That's what an atom is. And within that, the Supreme Lord expands himself within every one of those. So there's the smallest, and he's smaller than the smallest. And simultaneously, not like he's flipping back and forth between the two, he's simultaneously bigger than the biggest. And then there's the medium size. And that medium size, or the human-like form of Krishna, he is the source of the bigger than the biggest and the smaller than the smallest, and everything that he's bigger than and smaller than, and everything in between. He, this Govinda, is the source of everything. He's Sarva Karana Karanam. So, back to what Lord Vishnu is saying to Dhruva here. I know your desire. I will fulfill your desire. You will achieve that abode. You will rule in that abode. But his desire, childish as it may have been, was to rule a Vaikuntha planet. He didn't say that. He said, I want a planet that's better than my father's. I want to rule a kingdom greater than my father. His father was Uttanapada, who was ruling this earth. I want a kingdom better than my father's father, who is Uttanapada's father, Swayambhuvamanu. He's ruling the universe. And his father is Lord Brahma. He's the topmost personality in the whole universe. I want a kingdom better than his, better than Brahmaloka. What's that? It's Vaikuntha. I want to rule Vaikuntha. Childish desire. But as the Prabhupada is saying in the purport, sometimes a father gives what his child wants, even never given before. So this planet has never been, it hasn't had a ruler before, because I'm the ruler, but you want, so you can be the ruler. There's a seat waiting for you. Just 60,000 years have to pass, then you can go sit there and preside, not only reside, but preside in Dhruvaloka. So Dhruvaloka and the pole star, they're used interchangeably. One means the other. And the pole star, I'm not an astrologer or astronomer, rather, but the pole star is something that astronomers know about, if I'm not mistaken. And it's one of the stars in the Big Dipper, and the Big Dipper revolves around that pole star, and I'm not so sure, but at least for sure, in the Vedic cosmology, all the planets, they're circumambulating. And why are they circumambulating? Just like we circumambulate Tulsi, or circumambulate in temples, you circumambulate the deity, or circumambulate the whole temple. Keeping the deity to your right, or the Tulsi Devi to your right, they keep to the right. That means you're moving clockwise. Keep to the right. And circumambulating, not just three times, but as long as creation exists. They're worshipping the personality of Godhead. The planets and the person presiding over those planets are worshipping the personality of Godhead. In their movement and in all and everything else that they do. And again, for sure, Dhruva is being granted residence in the spiritual world. Oh, he's just a little boy. Not merely because of incredible austerities that he performed, but the pure devotion that he attained. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary says, and I give you prema, Krishna prema pradayate. You can't go and get it. It can be given to you. And the giver is the personality of Godhead. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gives Krishna prema pradayate, gives love of God freely. And the price is much more with Lord Vishnu. Very costly. But Dhruva paid the price. And he achieved prema, an entrance into the eternal abode of the Lord. Okay, so I'll end there and see if there's some discussion. Suja, yes.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
I have two questions. One is, it says that when we start to read the Bhagavatam first, so we have to do prayers to Naranarayana Rishi and Saraswati, all that. So the Saraswati which it says is a prototype of Saraswati which is in the
I didn't say that. I said that the Saraswati that gave Lord Brahma his mantra, according to Bhaktisiddhanta, is the prototype Saraswati, or the Saraswati of the spiritual world. Now, if your question is, which of the two Saraswatis is the one that's referred to in the Bhagavatam? Without the commentary of Acharyas, I don't know. What else? They have for what?
I mean, it says that we have to do prayers to Saraswati, so is there any specific prayers that we have?
That's it. That's it. Bhagavatam verse, that's the only one I know. The one that you referred to.
My second question is, I'm trying to picturize this pole star on the other planets, like, usually, I mean, we know like the sun planets do rovers or the like the sun upper system. So
that's three out of seven.
I mean, out of seven, like the first three is rover and the
yes.
So my understanding is all the planets under preceding deity or the predominating like sun god. So everybody kind of is their abode is that the third planet is the. But the Swarga planet is the abode for
all. No. Swarga is a region which is populated by many planets and many personalities presiding on those planets. That's Swarga.
So where do all these planets?
They in one of the regions, depending upon their position.
It's like within the tree.
It's I'm going like this because it's described that they're vertical. Bhuvarloka, Svargaloka, Maharloka, Janaloka, Tapaloka, Brahmaloka. There's one, Brahmaloka, as far as I understand. And below that, there's regions which are populated by many different planets. And then another region populated by many different planets. And another region populated by many different planets. Someone else has their hand up. You're done?
No.
Okay. What is it?
So, I was trying to understand like how, since that is the central part of the pole star remains the center and all the planets surrounded and like taking stuff from there. So, when the annihilation takes place, how does it not affect the center part and the other part?
When what doesn't what?
When the annihilation takes place.
Annihilation takes place.
So how the pole star is not affected?
Because it's transcendental. That's how it's not. Picture a chandelier. If the lower part of a chandelier is cut or annihilated, the upper part of the chandelier is unaffected. Yes?
It's saying in the Bhagavatam you should abandon all religions, but if these was your prescribed duties before that you start coming to Bhagavatam classes, Srimad Bhagavatam classes, I mean, I know he probably give it up for a second, but wouldn't it just take the devotion, wouldn't you just come do the devotional service and still do your prescribed duties?
Well, two things, at least. One is the term prescribed duties have to do with the duties of a householder, the duties of a sannyasi, the duties of different orders and occupations in life. There are duties fixed.
I mean, would that be a devotional service, though?
Let me finish. Okay. not exactly. They follow behind devotional service, but they're not the essence of your devotional service. There's a train, and the front car is a locomotive, and behind the front car there's all these other cars, and that makes up a train. So the locomotive is for Krishna, and behind that one is so many other things, duties. But my primary duty is serving Krishna, and the form that may take may be this, it may be that, different manifestations. But now, supposing I don't know about devotional service. There are people that don't know about devotional service because they don't want to know about devotional service. It's not like information isn't there. They just don't want to know about it. What they want is a couple things. They want prosperity. So the way to get prosperity is I'll do my prescribed duty. And I won't do sinful things. I'll do the good and don't do the bad, and then I'll get piety instead of sinful reactions. I'll get pious reactions and I'll prosper. I'm not interested in devotional service, such persons may think. I'm not interested in devotional service. I'm interested in prosperity. So Krishna is saying in that verse that you're referring to, it's a Bhagavad Gita verse, by the way. It's a Bhagavad Gita verse. In that verse, Krishna is saying, those things should be, he uses abandon, but so they're to be subordinated to the higher thing. You connect the cars with the locomotive. You connect the chandelier with the thing that fastens it to the ceiling. If you don't have the thing that fastens it to the ceiling, it's just a pile of glass or crystal on the floor. But you hang it, and then those things, they follow behind. They're subordinate to.
The biggest stuff, the lowest stuff, but the middle.
Which?
No, when you're just talking about Krishna, he has the higher self, he has the smaller self.
Well, it's like
the medium.
That's just that piece. Put that to the side for a moment. Our primary duty is one thing: surrender to Krishna. That's what the verse is saying. The other things, the secondary things, follow behind the primary thing. So Krishna's not saying, "Don't worry about religious marriage." If you're a householder, you follow the duties of religious marriage. But that's not the essence. The essence is surrender to the personality of Godhead. That's the primary thing. And then the secondary things follow behind the primary thing. That's the meaning of that verse. Don't get too confused about what else it means. That's what it means. That's the primary thing. Take your primary, like what's supposed to happen during this life, what's your job description? Surrender to Krishna. Then there's so many other things that I do pursuant to surrender to Krishna. I offer my food to Krishna, I chant Krishna's name, I have a job where I'm working in a responsible, honest manner, and the fruits belong to Krishna, and then so I go and purchase things for Krishna. I pay my bills that are for Krishna's service in an honest way, because the primary thing is I'm surrendering unto Krishna. All the rest of the stuff that life is made up of is following that one thing. That's what the verse is saying. Yeah, yeah. Something else. Yes.
Question about Vedic cosmology. Because you know, my perception of cosmology was you had, you know, the three dimensions of length, depth, and width, and the infinite variety between there. I was explained to me at a L.A. Rocky Yaki Leeds 2009 that there's 11 known dimensions in the Vedic cosmology.
I don't know.
For example, but like
where are we? Before you go, where are we going?
Oh,
where's the train going?
Yeah, distance of the moon to the Earth, like the vertical measurement of the moon is like 239,000 miles from Earth. But I was told that the horizontal measurement from the moon is 94 million miles away.
Yeah.
And I explained that.
You just did. Okay, here's a globe or a ball. Mm-hmm. This is three-dimensional. Mm-hmm. And the Earth is in this, you take a slice, like, you know, an orange, and there's a slice right through the middle. And that's the Earth is in that plane. And the radially outwards, the sun has a certain distance from the Earth. But in the vertical dimension, the sun is very close to the same slice of the orange, or the plane in which the Earth resides. But in the vertical dimension, the moon, vertically, as far as the globe is concerned, is above. Its orbit is smaller, and so on and so on. But vertically, it's above. And there's some dimension, and that's what the Vedas give. So I don't know about this 11-dimension thing. It's a three-dimensional picture. So the Earth, the moon, is higher in the vertical measurement. It's higher than the Earth or the sun because they're relatively close to the same plane. In fact, the planets that are moving around the sun as the sun is in its ecliptic moving around the Earth, it's relatively in the same plane, the same slice of that orange. You have to go up here. It's pretty much in the same plane. But amongst those, the moon is in a higher vertical position. That's my understanding anyway. Anyone else? Yes.
This one down. So moon and sun are heavenly planets, right?
The moon for sure is a heavenly planet.
Moon is heavenly planet, so I don't know whether they fall in that heavenly region and the vertical lines.
Good
if
question.
That is how it rotates around the Earth.
Good question. I don't have an answer. Good question. Okay, thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.